Picked the wrong week. Quit sniffing glue.
And welcome to Pod Stallions, the official podcast of Plaid Stallions. I'm Brian, and always to my left is Jason.
Hello, everyone.
And just before we get into the episode, I wanted to talk a little bit about something that got brought up through several emails and contacts through the Facebook page, and that is me mumbling. I hope that it's fixed with this episode. Basically, it was a little bit of a new program I was working with that kind of downplayed my sound. I don't know why that is.
It was called Jim Beam, I think.
Jim Beam, yes. My old grandpa.
Old grandpa.
So hopefully you guys can hear me now. And but, you know, it's really great how many of you reached out and told me. I really appreciate it. I didn't know my fly was open. So.
Your virtual fly.
Yeah, my audio fly.
That's another good name for a band.
It is. We tend to come up with good band names. Do you have any talent? Because I don't have any talent.
In the band area?
Musical area, yeah.
Yeah, I can sing.
Oh, yeah, I can karaoke, but that's about
I can,
it.
No, I mean, I really can sing. I can sing your boots off.
Oh, that's good. I'm
you know, it's funny. I was back in the Twin Cities a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
Hometown. Which is a very mixed thing when you go back, because it's for me, and now it's become like every 3 or 4 years. And but in a weird way, did you ever see Nebraska with Bruce Dern?
Bruce Dern. Is that thing with the lottery ticket or
yeah
Bruce no Dern I never did
one and, okay
I felt what? Like I did because the trailer was sprawling.
Oh man, I had some Nebraska type moments with my dad and some older guys that just you could walk in this Italian restaurant 10 years ago, 12 years ago, 20 years from now, or the day I left, and these same guys would be sitting on these bar stools.
Oh yeah.
Frankie Yeruso, Jimmy Cucciarella, you know, Johnny Badafutabada.
Good Irish guys.
Right, and they turn around, they see my dad, like, hey, Johnny, where you been? And they think I'm my older brother, and then it's like all practical jokes, and my dad can't wait to get on. It was so bizarre. But then there are other times where you turn a corner, and it's like, you know, it's like that grade school you go back to visit as an adult, and yeah. Everything just seems so small because you were just such a little kid, you know, in the grade school.
Yeah.
And then we met a buddy of mine from high school for breakfast. Pete Tangy, who listens to both shows. If you're listening, Pete, great to see you. Wish it could have been longer.
Hi, Pete.
And he started filling me in on stuff that I have absolutely no recollection of from back in high school. But he brought something up that is the single greatest moment of my high school career. You know you can sing when you're driving in the car on the way to school. Maybe a buddy's in the car and they go, hey, you got a pretty good voice. But you don't have – no one knows you can sing. And then it was the last dance of the year, and it was not – it was because I went to a military school, so it wasn't a military dance. So it was suit and tie and took our dates and stuff, and it was towards the end. And the band that was playing was like a Sha-na-na type band. They were called the Rockin' Hollywoods.
Timely.
And the dean of students, who I was good friends with his kid, John, suddenly comes up to me, taps me on the shoulder and says, hey, the band wants to know if anybody wants to go up and sing with them for one of the last numbers. Anybody want to go up there? And I just like bolted. Yeah, of course I do. Yeah, me. I'm going. I'll do it. And I went up there and I grabbed a couple other people and they're like, what should we do? What kind of rock and roll songs? And I start throwing a couple of titles out to the kids that I'm with. And just as I'm throwing them out, the band's already kicking into them. And then I said, no, I got it. Long Tall Sally. Long Tall Sally. And I get out on the stage and the big rock in Hollywood goes, oh, so you ready to, you know, who's the one that's going to take up the, I said, I'll be singing. And just like a cocky, just like Marty McFly, I was just so cocky. I was like, yeah, listen, do you guys know Long Tall Sally? You do? Okay, great. Long Tall Sally, follow me, watch for the changes, and I'll just keep turning back to you guys and we'll be good. And they looked at each other like, who is this little prick? And Long Tall Sally, when you start it, it doesn't start with instruments, it starts with the vocal. And I kicked into this thing, and the rest is 4 minutes of high school history, because from top to bottom, I owned this song. And when I looked out, I'll never forget looking out, these faces just going, what is going on out there, up there? Because no one knew that I could sing.
Right.
And it was, it brought the house down. And the band thought it was just the funnest thing ever. They couldn't believe I knew the song backwards and forwards. So that was the moment that I said, someday I'm going to start a podcast. It has nothing to do with singing. And never
talk about it on an episode that has nothing to do about singing.
And never get use out of my voice whatsoever. But I can sing. So if you can play an instrument and you can find six other talented people, and then we can get a manager and we can put this thing out there, I think we can get a band going.
That sounds like how you get a band going.
I know a guitarist. I know a guy who plays guitar. But the thing is, we've already got a great band name.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes, we do.
Which is?
Cosplay is not consent.
Which is the funniest slash saddest?
I think I would go to sad.
Saddest sign I've ever seen at a convention.
Just because it has to be there.
The closest, the next closest saddest is being at a local con, you know, at the Shrine kind of thing, and coming around a corner, and where there was a black tarpaulin kind of thing up, and it said the cardboard sign in very horrible Sharpie taped kind of askew said smut half off. Not even adult materials around the band, it was smut half off. I thought it covered a lot of bases, obviously.
Yeah.
But this sign basically was put up at Star Wars Celebration to say, hey, listen, lots of people will be walking around in costume at these things. If you'd like to take a picture with someone in costume, please, by all means, ask for permission. And I'm sure they'll let you do so. However, when you're getting close to them to get the picture taken, keep your frickin' hands to yourself. Don't try grabbing a tit or an ass or a leg or a finger or something while you're up there, because you haven't touched anything ever in your life. And this is the sign that had to be put up. Like, just because this person is taking a picture with you doesn't mean you can start groping them.
Well, you know, I thought about it after, and it makes me sad, but that's why strip joints have bouncers, right? And
yeah, that ruined
it. It's kind of a sad statement on society, and one we're not going to fix. So
no, not in this episode anyway.
But anyways, yeah, that I agree with you. I've seen that sign as well. And
I've never seen it before.
I have, and it just makes me sad, because it's like, really? You have to do this? And of course they do, and that's the depressing thing about it, is, you know, that's what we've come to. You know.
And our first album, the title of our first album, Cosplay Eyes.
Cosplay Eyes, that's right.
I think there's something here.
I think there's something there. Now we just need songs, talent.
And an audience.
An audience. Speaking of which, we're losing ours.
I'm sorry. For those that are still there.
Our topic tonight is one you may be very familiar with, and that is... if you've ever glued your fingers together or used old tester's paint, it is model kits. And not, I don't know about you, but I've never put a car or plane model kit together in my life.
Oh, really?
I have always been a figural, spaceshipy type of guy.
Okay.
And that goes right back to my childhood. And I, you know, I don't know about your first exposure to model kits, but mine came when my dad, who was a toy distributor, bought closeouts of the Aurora Comic Scenes model kits.
Ooh, ooh.
I still have the receipt. I'm going to try and dig up the receipt for the show and
show it. You went right to genre.
I went right to genre, and I think a lot of Aurora, of course, being the king of figural model kits in the 60s, there were others, but I mean, Aurora basically started the trend with the Superman kit, I believe, or it was a Frankenstein. I'll have to double check.
It might have been Frankenstein.
And I think Superman came later. But either way, they really started the figural model kit craze of the 60s. And of course, these kits, for the most part, were reissued right up until the 90s. In fact, you can still go to a store and buy most of the kits I had as a kid.
Okay.
In fact, I go to a local hobby shop all the time because it's now a family tradition in our house at Halloween to put together some Aurora monsters. I'm staring at a very imaginatively painted Wolfman that my daughter did.
Awesome.
He's got powder blue pants.
And they like it.
They
like
doing this stuff. Love it. Yeah.
So cool. That's so cool.
I remember putting the comic scenes. What they were re-releases of the 60s Aurora kits, but they got people from the DC and Marvel bullpen to create a comic book that went inside. And what you did was you used one panel from the comic book and that as a backdrop, and that became part of the story.
Mm-hmm.
So they all had these kind of stories, and I think I remember most of them. And then you took that page of the comic and put it behind. So it was a really neat concept.
Hmm.
And I don't think they sold super great because my dad was sure buying them cheap. And I had them all. I put them together. I painted them terribly. And I treated them like action figures.
Ah.
Which I think a lot of kids did.
Well, therein lies that. Okay, well, let me tell you. I'll back up a bit and tell you my I'm thinking. See, the thing is, I have two older brothers, and growing up, you know, my dad was a real World War II buff, history buff, and World War I, World War II, mainly World War II, and not, you know, wasn't it a great war? Wasn't it fun? Aren't the Nazis great? Not that kind of thing, but just the admiration of all the machinery, all the U.S. and German and Japanese, you know, machinery that came out of that era. Particularly the German stuff, but the tanks. He really loved all the tanks, and so does Bowie.
He's obviously not alone, by the way. I actually know people to this day who have like tanks and stuff.
Yeah, they're a marvel to look at in footage and just of engineering. But it really started with him, I think, and those kits that he would make, which then turned my older brothers on to model kits. And then it became like a Saturday or a Sunday where my dad, my two brothers, myself being, I don't know, 9 or 10 years old or so, going to the hobby shop and starting me on stuff that I could sort of do, you know, like stuff that was either snap together kind of stuff or character stuff that wasn't so much World War II stuff. And then I reached a point, you know, right around 11 or 12 where I got really turned on by these small Japanese kits, which were tanks. It was a series of plastic model kits of the tanks of the world, but they were about the size, when you finished them, they were probably, you know, about the size of a Corgi, like a Corgi James Bond vehicle or something. And then I started to get into painting. And then, you know, the real tough thing was to try to paint them white for the winter expansion when the tanks would be in cold territory. You'd have to do like 6 coats of white paint on this green plastic or whatever. And so eventually I had a series of these, you know, small kits. And I couldn't have been, I must have been 11 or 12, but I was getting my hands around these smaller kits, which were probably for slightly older. And then I started to discover at this one hobby shop in St. Paul, which was a larger hobby shop, there was one corner, because it was mostly, you got to admit, the hobby shops were, model shops were mostly military type stuff or historical
Well,
stuff.
yeah, or gliders or those
Gliders.
Estes rockets that I always wanted to do, but
And there
you
was a time where toy stores were toy and model shops.
Oh yeah, I can honestly remember that going to Eaton's as a kid and there would be a huge section of models. I mean, models have really it makes me sad when I go to Toys R Us or Michaels. It makes me sad in one respect, but in the other respect, it opens the door. I actually have three hobby shops in my neighborhood now.
Oh wow, that's very cool because
Yeah.
they're definitely a dying breed.
And they're
But
clubhouses, man. Like
the
just
model kit clubhouses?
oh, they're just like the way comic shops are for comic guys. It's
Sure.
the well, I make a joke out of it, like, I better go see if Gus is working today, like
Oh.
Just because I think it's kind of funny how these guys are just hanging around, talking politics, talking everything in the hobby shop, and the only thing they really have in common is love of, toy cars or whatever they're doing in there.
Yeah, it's it they're a dying breed. But what happened was that hobby shop, but I wish I could think of the name of it in St. Paul. Like the bulk of it was military kits and airplanes and tanks and all that stuff. And then there was one corner. If there was one whole aisle, there was one quarter of the aisle on one corner. That was like, Star Trek and Star Wars. And, I mean, Star Wars you could find at Target and places like that. And I remember getting the Biker Scout kit because I hadn't found a Biker Scout toy. So I got the Biker Scout kit. I think I
It
got
was
a,
a nice kit, as I recall.
yeah, it was for Jedi. I think I got a Falcon kit for one of the earlier, it was like a big snap together Falcon kit or something for Empire. My dad, it's funny. Oh, I should take pictures of these and send them to you to put up for the show. I still have. My dad built me 3PO and R2,
I remember those kits.
the very first NPC kits that came out. And 3PO had red eyes. He had the back panel popped off, and you could see little wires underneath it. R2 had a couple of panels that came off that you could see things underneath his front and back. And I
Funny story about that kit.
still have them.
One kid had the C-3PO, showed it to me, and you know how you're like you're eight and you go, "Can I borrow that tonight?" And the kid went, "Sure." I broke it.
Can I borrow that
Yeah,
too?
I borrowed it, and it would never enter my mind to ask to borrow anything these days. But I was eight, and I was like, "Can I borrow that?" And he lent it to me. He was such a nice kid.
Did
And
that once
I
with my,
broke it, and
yeah.
all I remember is my dad sitting with like a rum and coke, just in a tank top, just like trying to fix it. And I woke
Wow.
up in the morning, and my mom goes, she handed it to me. She said, "Your father spent hours on this. Get it back to school."
Wow.
So I had to return it to this kid. I think his name was Jeff. I'm sorry, Jeff.
Well, he was probably a jerk. No, I'm kidding. I did something similar, I think, with a cousin's. I borrowed the, you remember slime?
Oh boy, do I. How could you borrow slime?
Well, the thing is, it was, I mean, everybody was talking about slime. This was slime before the worms were added, before the eyeballs. This was just pure uncut slime
I remember
that
Urchin
once you
slime.
cracked it open, you started getting high just breathing it in. This was
Why
pure,
do I remember that smell so well?
because it was, it, this is pure Bolivian slime.
Yeah.
And I loved this thing. I loved it. I couldn't figure out why it wasn't sticking to stuff and how come it was kind of greasy, but then it wasn't. And then I took it outside, I think. I don't know why, but it got on the grass. And that's the last place you should take slime, is put it on the grass.
Or, yeah, it's supposed to go on shag carpeting.
It's supposed to go on shag carpeting. I took it outside for some stupid reason. And then I think I tried washing the grass off.
That's gonna
So I
hold
put
up.
it in a frisbee and ran some water from the outside water, and it literally just like disintegrated.
I love the little kidness of that. And I put it in a frisbee because that's what was lying around,
To get the grass off. That's why I had to
Yeah.
wash it off. I used what I had handy.
Yeah.
And yeah. If I had to do a trach, I would have probably grabbed the tube out of a squirt gun. I mean, that's what I used, what I had laying around as a kid.
Yeah. No, like I'm not judging. I just,
I was like a child MacGyver.
Yeah, that's, well, we all were. We yeah. You know, yeah.
Stop the bleeding. Get some tree bark. Press it on there.
Yeah. So you're absolutely right about that, because growing up, I've told this story before, but I was practically raised in a mall.
Yes.
Because of a family situation. And across the hall from my grandparents' store, which was not that interesting for a child, was a hobby shop called DeBose Hobby. And it was a smaller store, but, you know, and they had everything from gliders to model kits to, the only action figure-y thing they sold was a line called Metal Man.
Oh, I love Metal Man.
Oh, dude, I got a whole cabinet of them. I absolutely love Metal Man. They were just these, you know, die-cast robot action figures that had no backstory, and they were amazing.
They weighed about 17 pounds.
Yeah, if you hit a kid with them, he wasn't going to do math. But they did have a pile of the AMT Ertl Star Trek kits. And I used to just stare at those, because they were way out of my skill level. And it wasn't until I turned about 12 or 13 that I attempted to buy them, because I collected and dealt toys for when I was about 14 or 15. And the reason that I could start was all the variety stores in my neighborhood still had unsold toys and hobby stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
That was too expensive back then and didn't sell. So you could walk into these stores and find Matt Mason. But the number one thing you could find was Star Trek model kits. And some Planet of the Apes, but I'll get to those later.
Was it AMT?
AMT Ertl. They were in every corner store. And there was a place downtown from me called the Corner Store that looked like a store out of 1977. You know, they still had Treasury Edition comics.
Sure.
They had Star Trek model kits. They had Viewmasters, you know, puffy stickers. And I got Star Trek Mania, like I talked about, during the Wrath of Khan summer.
Mm-hmm.
And I started buying some of the kits. I bought the Galileo shuttle.
Galileo!
And I bought the bridge. And the two things I learned was, I shouldn't have bought the paint from there, because it was also from 1974. So it, you know, it didn't have that cohesiveness I wanted. And two, those labels that... Do you remember the labels that you had to put on these model kits?
Oh, that you'd
you
put
had
in
to
water?
Soak them in a hot bowl of water.
Soak a hot thing of water, and then use your mom's press-on nails and a freaking tweezers to slide them off. Yeah.
And the skills of an adult surgeon.
Yes.
Like, son of a bitch, this thing
yes.
was impossible.
Needed to have a medical degree.
I screwed those kits up so badly.
Oh, yeah.
It was actually infuriating.
Everyone did.
I know, but I just remember I used old glue, so the white, you could see the rotten glue. I just remember being like almost humiliated by these kits. And it really turned me off vehicles and spaceships for life. And it wasn't until I think I turned about... I got into the garage kit scene with friends in the early 90s. Do you remember the garage kit scene?
I do. I was never part of it. I was heavy into cocaine at that point.
Oh, yeah.
No, I was... the garage kit thing, I'll tell you my one experience with garage kits. Can we go forward that far yet?
Well, I think let me jump around.
Yeah, let me jump around.
Yeah.
Let me go back a little bit here. So I'm starting to buy character stuff. My brother, Jack, who, you know, dabbled once he's out of high school and he's into college. I don't know if it's, you know, drinking more, because, you know, you could drink at 18 back then in Minnesota. Maybe he's got, because, you know, he moved. I mean, the day he graduated high school, he went right out of the basement. Well, he was living in the basement at our house growing up. My mother says she'll never forget coming home. And all of a sudden, there comes up the bed, comes up the stairs and the desk. She's going, Jack, where are you going? Oh, I'm moving over to grandma's house, because grandma had a duplex. So he could kind of have his own little apartment on the other side of the house.
Oh, yeah.
And that's where he was. But that's where he made more model kits. And I remember him making the big AMT Enterprise and then the three-ship kit, which was the Enterprise, the Klingon cruiser, and the Romulan bird of prey.
Yeah.
And I will never forget him trying to get the damn decal on the bottom of the bird of prey, because he left the paint blank. He painted it green for some reason, but he thought, I'll leave the paint area blank so I can get this decal on and then paint around it. And I swear this decal took him like 3.5 hours to get this thing right. And it still never looked right, but he was almost on the verge of tears trying to get that thing done. And I thought with that, well, maybe I can try some. So I tried the Spock with the snake thing. I never finished that. I desperately, desperately always wanted the exploration kit, which yep. was the phaser, the little communicator, kind of like the one that Remco eventually made. It's basically,
yeah, and I don't think they were full sized.
No, they weren't. They definitely weren't full sized.
I did find one of those in a cigar store downtown, along with the K7 space station.
Oh yeah,
the trouble with Tribbles, but I ended up selling those because at the time I was trying to get Mego toys and those kind of things, and people were paying a high price for those.
But then this is right around the time, and you and I've already covered this episode, but this is right around the time that I'm discovering the ads in the back of Starlog.
Oh yeah,
way for this, mail away for that. I knew of the Gerry Anderson stuff, you know, I knew of Thunderbirds, and I think I kind of knew Captain Scar. I certainly knew Space 1999. I'm not sure if I put it all together that it was the same guy doing all this stuff, but I would get these catalogs of these strange model kits that had to be coming from Japan. And they were of Captain Scarlet and Destiny Angel and different characters, where it was like you'd get a figure of the like a solid figure of the character, or a kit of the character, and then a kit of the ship that they flew.
Yeah, it was like a tinier version of the ship.
Right? Yeah, do you remember those?
Yeah, like I do remember those. I had them. They looked like a nightmare to put together.
Yeah, they weren't. Plus, they were, you know, you everything's in Japanese.
Yeah, you just reminded me, Japanese. I got onto the around grade 9. I got into the whole Godzilla movie, Ultraman thing.
Sure.
And at back of Starlog, just like you, I found this place that sold Japanese kits.
Mm-hmm.
I would buy them, and then I would have to go pick them up at the customs office because they'd always get nailed for customs charges.
Oh yeah.
And the customs office was open from like 9 to 9:15 every day. And it was like downtown in another town, so I'd have to take a bus. It was horrendous
mm-hmm.
to get your package, but mm-hmm. it obviously didn't deter me from getting packages as I look around. But I would get these little kits of like Ultraman, and it would come with his spaceship or Ultra yeah. 7. Yeah, exactly the same kind of deal.
Well, it became very clear to me that I was moving further away from model kits and wanting to get back in. See, I think what happened was there was this divide. I tell the story 100 times now, but I'll tell it again. The day that I sort of came home then and changed my routine and suddenly thought, I think I might be getting a little too old for these things, was
still waiting for that day.
Storkville, which you have pictures of on your
yes.
site, a place called Storkville in St. Paul in a strip mall, where I bought my Indiana Jones figures, a lot of my Mego Buck Rogers figures, some of the AHI, whoever it was, Buck Rogers gun and helmet sets and things like that. And I saw these He-Man figures. And it was the first time I'd ever seen them. I'd never seen commercials or TV, nothing. And I bought He-Man and Skeletor and I think Beast-Man. I had a pretty good amount of pocket change that day.
No kidding. I bought He-Man.
And I thought they were so freaking cool. Like, what are these things? They come with a comic book and they look like, I know the Conan stuff and the Beastmaster and whatever. And I got them home and I thought they were cool. But for some reason, I remember just having them going, I think I might be a little too old for this. And for some reason, that thing started to kind of get shoved under the bed at that point. And it wasn't until, you know, graduating high school, you know, a little getting to college, that all these movies started. I started to fall in love with Bond again. And I'd seen everything, but Bond became a big deal. And Indiana Jones was a big deal. Star Wars a little bit. And that it was right at the time of that secondary market boom with the toy shop paper and things like that, where you could get a carded Marion a Ravenwood figure for $50. That was the most you were going to pay. It was kind of,
yeah.
So this was right around the time. And so I think the model kit thing started to become like, well, this is not quite toys. I'm actually making something here. I'm taking something from nothing and I'm producing something, and look at how beautiful it is. I've created. But the other thing I think that happened was, you know, getting into Doctor Who, because look, let's face it. We didn't know if we were going to get another Indiana Jones. We had the two. The second one was not fun. Bond was an ongoing thing, but much as I liked Roger Moore, I thought it had become a comedy. Star Wars, as far as we were concerned, was done and dusted. What was going to be the next thing we were going to be into? And Doctor Who was a thing that I was into as a kid, and it kind of went through those early tween years, kind of. And they certainly seemed to be adverse to toys. I certainly never was able to find anything remotely that looked like a frickin' toy other than a cardboard Easter egg box. And I thought, well, maybe that's the whole vibe of Doctor Who. They're just not a toy-type fan base and nobody cares. So the two big things that were announced at the same time, you may know exactly where I'm going with this. They made this announcement as if, honest to God, as if it was Mattel getting the new Batman Superman movie or something. This was such a monumental thing for Doctor Who. A little company out of someone's shoebox called Fine Art Castings.
Oh, yeah.
Going to be making white metal figurines based on characters throughout the history of the show. But bigger than that was a guy whose name I forgot, but his company was called Sevens, S-E-V-A-N.
Oh, Sevens, yeah.
Models. And man, they spent a year in the Doctor Who magazine pimping this Dalek construction kit, which was a garage kit.
Yeah.
No two ways about it. And I never put it together. I
mean, it sure looked great when it was done, though.
It took 17 people to put together and 18 cans of paint and all kinds
Somebody
of,
would die, yeah.
Somebody had to die, or a child had to be sacrificed, or I don't know what. But this thing stayed in the cardboard box with the big sticker of the finished thing in my home as my part of my Doctor Who collection. I never put it together. They ended up making a Dalek, a different Dalek, an Ice Warrior, a Cyberman, and they were beautiful, but they were the definition of garage kits and the definition of the BBC going, okay, go ahead and make that thing. Like, you could never just, you know, try to make that, you know, today. So that's what I associate with garage kits, and never really having the affinity for that. I think I made some more kits right around that time. I got more into like some of the Japanese ships because, you know, the Japanese stuff, It was a model kit, but sometimes it flipped around and it became a robot, or it stood upright and became a ship or whatever.
Yeah, I remember I bought a Space 1999 Eagle from Japan, and inside the kit were wheels and one of those like rev back motors.
Yeah.
So you were supposed to turn it into like a toy car, which was like not what I was into.
Well, it always knocked me out with the Japanese stuff that, I mean, the likes of which I'd never seen in an American kit. You open this kit, and yeah, there would be rubber bands in there, and like different kinds of easier to apply decals, and there would be, you know, wheels that rev that had to go a certain way, or spring loaded things that went in the front where the missiles went, or something. And then to top it off, a little silver tube of glue. That you poked a pin in the end, and you went,
I forgot about that. God. Yeah, you could use their glue.
The Japanese had it all sorted. It's like a little sushi kit. It was all right there in a box. You didn't need to go anywhere. Sometimes they even had paint in there. Like, it was a one stop shop for making your model kit.
Well, you know, a friend of mine actually just came back from Japan, and one of the things that he was, you know, we were just chatting away about it. He said one of the things that he really thought was funny is he got a hot dog at 7-Eleven. And this woman handed him like a little kit, and one of the things in there, he popped the top off and laid it across the hot dog, and it created a perfect stripe of ketchup and mustard.
Oh, wow.
And he was just like, this is so neat. You know, just this little thing that we don't have that they do.
Well, they're living on the moon in Japan.
Yeah.
Like, they do things. You know, I remember, you know, when I've told you my horrible, horrible story about my brother, my older brother, saying, don't buy any robots. You can get them in Korea. Don't waste your money.
Yeah,
So that never
I
happened.
have. That makes me angry for some reason.
Yeah, well, you can beat him up. But the couple of things I did get a couple of toys, but two of the smaller things that I recall distinctly were in the candy aisle. And so you'd get this thing that was in cellophane, and on the one side was like a little box of malted milk balls, chocolate malted milk balls. It was a smaller box. The slightly longer box on the right side, you cracked open on one and you pulled it out, and it was a model kit of some kind of robot or something.
Oh yeah, I seem to recall those
A
too.
snap together kit, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was just at the Star Wars celebration. Very last minute, I got a pass and went on. It would seem churlish if I'm in the area not to go, considering the trailer came out and all the other things that
It would
happened.
almost seem rude.
It would almost seem rude, and they'd expect it of me. So I went, and you know, you go to these tables. I texted you some photos. You know, you go to these shows, and it's like, no offense to him, but it's the same thing at this table. That's the same thing at this table. That's the same shit down there. Theirs is $5 less. Theirs is $10 more. But you can go around that thing, and 95% of what you see is the same stuff. And then you come along a table, and your chin hits the floor. And I did it at two different tables. One, I sent you loads of photos. They had like Star Wars Clarks in boxes, these little kids' shoes in boxes.
You know what? That's more interesting to me than a table of action figures. Because I've seen a table of action figures
Exactly. You don't
before.
see Clarks with the
You don't.
bag inside
My
at six.
grandparents owned a shoe store. I've never seen that many
Oh my God.
Clarks.
It had the primitive artwork on the sides, the
Oh.
plastic bag inside with the Darth Vader sticker.
I wanted you to grab me one, and then I was like, what the hell am I going to do with that?
Well,
But
I
it's.
thought, you know, am I gonna look creepy walking around the place with a little pair of little kid shoes? But that, and then some other things they had, like from the 75, 76 era of Star Trek, like patches and necklaces and all this stuff that we'd see in the superhero catalogs, you know, or
Yeah.
back of comic books and stuff. And then
Did you see your Iddic medallion?
I did not find that. Had I found it, I'd be wearing it right now.
Yes.
But I found this table, this one, and this tiny little table, and he had like a couple of Peter Davis and Doctor Who puzzles, and like a Star Wars annual from 78, just these oddball things. And there, in a little case, he had about a dozen different little plastic figurines from Japan. Do you remember those? So that wilderness that we loved between 77 and like 79, all the madness of Star Wars. In Japan, there were these like malted milk type candies in little boxes, and each one came with a little toy, like a little Millennium Falcon or a little C-3PO or a little, and I'm saying very primitive designs because they were working off of nothing. But I got this tiny little Millennium Falcon that even back then the Japanese were putting little things like this in their candies. I'm digressing like mad, but I'm saying that even in 84 in Japan, when I was there and I bought some candy, there were little model kits inside the other box that the candy, you know, came in.
Yeah, no. Japan's got it going on for model kits, that's for sure. And it's a model kit culture there.
Do you remember the kit? I bet we both did this and didn't even know what it was. Do you remember the model kit that was done by Gerry Anderson, but it was some kind of.
Yeah, I remember it. I think I want to say Space Cruiser 1, but that's not it.
That sounds pretty close.
There used to be one in a Hobby World. There used to be a Hobby World in a mall near me. All I remember was all orange, and they had every single genre model kit. You know, they had the Aurora, the ship from the Invaders, and they had the flying sub. They had everything painted, built, and hanging from the ceiling. And I remember when the store was going under, I tried to buy them, and the guy was, you know, high on crack as to what their value was. But it was they had a copy of is it Star Cruiser 1 or Space Cruiser 1?
I think Star Cruiser 1 might be it.
Yeah, it was just an original design by Anderson. I remember him selling it, and it seemed to be like it was from a show.
I think the hopes were that, see, back then, I think back then Anderson, you know, he kept trying to be an innovator. And I think back then it was like, well, here's a vehicle that could go into a show, should anyone be interested. Let's make it as its own thing or something.
Yeah,
it was something like
a Star
that.
Cruiser. Star Cruiser.
Yeah, he had the whole layout of the description of it and what it was supposed to be and how many people could live in it, and then it came apart like in three different sections and everything. And
well, what it was he pitched it as a TV series. That was the model of the ship. It never went anywhere. So then he managed to persuade the British Airfix, who made it, and they were also going to get Dinky Toys to do a die-cast of it. But
there you go.
There was a comic strip in the UK that ran for over 75 issues.
In the Dandy?
They never did it. No, it was in Lookin.
Oh, Lookin! That's right!
The Dandy was home to Desperate Dan.
That's right. Is Desperate Dan still around? Because if he is, he's got to be really desperate.
Well, you know, last time I checked, still Dennis the Menace, still the Bash Street Kids and the Beano, I would imagine the Dandy still has some of its... is that where Minnie the Minx came from?
That's not where I met her.
Oh, okay. You know what's funny is that no one... like having read British comics as a kid and growing up in Canada, nobody gets you. You know, you have to find another kid who had some sort of connection to the UK. Or they just... oh, and if you tell the people from the UK, they look at you like, you know about those? Because it's so weird.
Well, it's like Dennis the Menace.
Yeah, they think you'd think it was the kid on the Dairy Queen cup here.
That's a whole different...
but in UK, he's kind of punk rock.
Whole different bag, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, he's very punk rock.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't... I did a piece for a show once. I did an on-camera thing not long ago where it was at a hobby shop in Burbank. They were trying to do this pilot about, you know, collectors and model makers and stuff, and they wanted me to maybe host it. So I did some stand-ups at this hobby shop. Mm-hmm. And while I was there, I just started piling stuff up on the counter like, okay, I want this, I have to get this. And I think I only got one of the kits or maybe a corgi or something, but I had like – they had like this redo of the Enterprise, but it was in this tin lunchbox.
Yeah, they did that with the – and this is one of my favorite model kits of all time, and that is the Mr. Spock model.
Yes, that's it.
Yeah. They put that in a tin lunchbox too. There's a couple of companies. I think – I don't – somebody in the know would know. I think it's Round Two right now, but before that it was Polar Lights, who were just doing these amazing recreations of Aurora model kits, and frankly I'm a fan.
Oh, Polar Lights, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, which is of course a play on Aurora.
Right.
So
I never put that together.
Yeah, it's subtle.
I never put that together. They had that, and they had a couple of Doctor Who kits. One was like the Doctor and Martha outside the TARDIS.
Yeah, my hobby store still has that.
I think one was a Cyberman or a Dalek or something.
Those look like nightmares to me.
Yeah, it just seems like this is good. You know, like the nostalgia in me goes, oh, I should do this. This will be fun. But there was a time, people forget, you know, when we talk about, have we done an episode on the superhero world catalogs?
No, we should, though.
We really should, because flipping through those, you remember, A, there was a time before Star Wars changed everything, not just the landscape, but the scale and everything else. And, you know, a lot of it consisted of, besides the Mego stuff, people were really into model kits. Model kits were a big deal. You know,
in fact, I've got a flyer right here that I will scan and put on Plaid Stallions one of these days. I have no idea what store this is for, but the front page of it's an order form for Streck Enterprises. You ever heard of Streck Enterprises?
Sure.
Yeah, which, guess what that stands for? The front page is the Adar Planet of the Apes model kits.
Nice.
Which we talked about in the last episode. Which,
nice.
Adar burned brightly, but not for a long time. They had some very hot licenses,
yes,
including Planet of the Apes and Jaws. And they made a killer Jaws kit that I've got to get my hands
on.
Oh,
yeah.
With a little Roy Scheider and everything. And then the back of this is the Star Trek model kits with the Exploration set, the Enterprise, the Klingon Cruiser, the Galileo, Mr. Spock, and at the bottom, the new UFO mystery ship. Do you remember this thing?
Did it glow in the dark?
Yes, it did.
I remember it.
Now, this was a 60s kit that I believe was reissued as a UFO.
Yeah.
And it was kind of done under the guise of Star Trek, but of course, just model kit companies are sneaky that way, and I'll go into it in another way too. But this was not, this had nothing to do with Star Trek.
Right.
This kit, it was just kind of flown under the, it was interplanetary UFO mystery kit.
It was like it was like the stuff that Sears or Montgomery Ward's did. And didn't exactly put Bionic Woman or 6 Minutes.
Oh, yeah, yeah, exactly. But, you know.
But they're like, we've got this computer monitor over here. We don't know what to do with it.
Yeah, yeah. And or you know, we'll put this villain next to Steve Austin in the catalog. Yeah.
Oh, what are, oh, hi, Dr. Steve. What are you doing?
Yeah.
What are you doing in this catalog? What?
Oh, and the word bionic, by the way,
I work
can't
here.
Copyright. So.
Yeah. I work
but
here,
that,
pal.
That was a kit designed by Matt Jeffries, the guy who created the original Enterprise.
See?
But it had nothing to do with Star Trek, and I don't think... I think he had a different name for it, and I can't remember what that was. I want to say it was named after a Viking, like it was supposed to be an exploration ship, but it got marketed as a... as an interplanetary UFO mystery ship.
Right.
And it was usually sold next to Star Trek kits. It was called the Leif Erikson, that was it. The original title for it was the Leif Erikson.
The what?
The Leif's Erikson's. It was a the original kit was called the Leif Erikson.
Are you making that up?
No, I'll send you a picture.
Do we know someone named Leif Erikson?
Yes, he's an explorer.
Oh, that's why.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And the other thing that where that happened was the company, I want to say Fun Dimensions, but I'll double check that, started doing genre kits in the late or the mid 1970s. So they did Bionic Man, they did Bionic Woman, obviously, and of course the Steve Austin kits. You remember those? Like Steve Austin Bionic Bust Out is the
one. Well, I'll tell you the best one. I mean, the single best. I think the single best $6 million man piece of merchandise, and certainly the single best piece of artwork, was the one where it's on the cover of the thing where he's fighting a bear.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, there's a couple of those.
I just want the original of that art, and I'd like to hang it in whatever home I end up dying in.
Yeah, his kit, those kits are amazing. Like, there's the Bionic Repair Center for Jamie. She's just sitting there while Oscar is working on her leg. But Steve's got one where he's bashing through a wall. Another one where he's flipping a gorilla over.
The gorilla's a great one, too.
Yeah, and there's one where he's beating up a biker and wrestling an alligator. Like, they're really...
Isn't there one with a bear, or am I thinking of the gorilla?
No, it's the gorilla.
It's the gorilla. It's him flipping the gorilla. That's it. That's the
one. If there was one beating up a hippie, it would be just perfect.
I wish there was.
And then... MPC also released Space 1999, so they did the Eagle, the Hawk, the Moonbase, and then they released something called the Interplanetary, or the Alien. And all the Alien was, it had like an astronaut, it looked like he was from 2001, and it was this funky-looking vehicle that never appeared on Space 1999, because it was like a George Barris funny car kit from the 60s.
What?
And they had just basically retooled it, put Space 1999, the Alien on it. And what's really funny about it, and I've talked about this on the blog, is AHI, I guess, saw that stuff in the licensing materials and released a toy of it, thinking it was a Space 1999 toy. So, you know, not only did you get a model kit that has nothing to do with Space 1999, you got a toy.
But you know what? We were desperate.
Oh, and we liked it. And then
we
the other thing
take
I think
whatever
is really,
we can get our grubby mitts on.
The other thing I think is really funny is they started doing things like Fonzie's bike and then Fonzie's dream car, which of course Fonzie didn't have a car.
Right.
And then they did the Sweat Hog's dream car. And you know what the Sweat Hog's dream car is? It's
A bag of weed?
the Monkey Mobile.
No.
Yeah, they repackaged the Monkey Mobile.
No way.
Yeah, way.
sorry about the bag of weed thing.
That's okay.
I don't know if the, listen, I don't want to cast aspersions. I don't know if the Sweat Hogs got high. I thought they were pretty anti-drug. I shouldn't have made that accusation.
You know what? I don't have any sort of I don't have any sort of understanding of their barometers on that.
I think Bob Marino was pretty anti-drug. Maybe it was a Scientology thing, but I bet if anybody was holding it, would have been Epstein. I think he probably was holding.
Racist.
I'm just saying he probably got it from someone in his family, probably. So model kits, they seem to kind of be coming back. Here's a question for you. The Lego craze. We knew Legos as kids, but we didn't make a Lego Wolverine. We pretended it was Wolverine. We pretended it was Chuck Yeager. They were just generic astronauts and whatever else.
Well, actually, I have my original Lego police set right here, and they don't even have faces.
Yeah.
They don't have
See?
arms.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, to me they were like it was Playmobil and then it went up to Lego and then Lego maybe led to I don't know, action figures, I guess. I don't know.
Whoever decided to finally, hey, we should do licensed Lego sets. Like, whoever figured that out deserves his own parking spot.
Really do. They really do
Yeah.
because it's changed everything. But do you think that Legos lead kids to model kits or vice versa? Do you think a kid puts a Lego thing together and a dad can be in a hobby store and go, "Hey, Timmy, you managed to put that Lego thing together pretty well there, son.
I gotta tell you,
I'd like to try some glue that'll get you high, an X-Acto knife that might cut off the tips of your fingers, and about 8,000 pieces you have to cut and put together with Japanese instructions. Sound fun?"
Mike, I gotta tell you, my son, it certainly led my son, like every time I go in his room, he is watching a YouTube video of Bionicle customization. And he was an avid Lego customizer, and now he's into this Bionicle, like I'm gonna build this super Bionicle, and he brings me these things he's figured out and kit bashed. So it definitely has a creative angle. The other thing I will say about Lego is I think it can't hurt model kits. It's killing action figures.
Do you think?
Oh yeah.
What do you mean? How do you mean? You're
Why
talking
would
to a
you
guy
buy?
that makes action figures, gets licenses, and makes toys, so you might want to tell me what's going on.
Yeah, I think you're safe. But okay, Guardians of the Galaxy comes out. Would my son rather buy? And the figures were rather lackluster for that movie. My son, I gave my son a part-time job this summer. He did very well. He had a little bit of spending money.
Oh, nice.
He went and bought this killer set with the Nova ship in it.
Oh, yeah, it's huge, right?
Yeah, well, it wasn't too bad. It was about the price of two action figures these
Okay.
days. And look what he got. He got a figural representation of some characters.
Right.
He got this amazing ship. Like it was really, really
Does it
neat.
make sounds?
No,
Does it light
but
up?
it does not.
Okay. Well, the one with the
But
action figures does. And see, here's what's interesting, and I know this is, I know that a lot of the Marvel.
I kind of gotta feel like girls, both your dresses are pretty. Don't worry about it here.
A lot of the Marvel Lego stuff is really killing. But I got to give it to we're digressing a bit here. But I got to give it to Hasbro for what they were trying to do, and now we're trying to do with Avengers by making the smaller scale of figures that'll go in the vehicles rather than trying to make a 6-inch figure or a 5-inch figure and then vehicles to go with it. Guardians being the foray into the Star Wars world, there are going to be a lot more vehicles and play sets and things, and they want to kind of keep that going with Avengers and everything else so that all these ships and vehicles can interact and be to scale with the figures. So they went with this smaller scale of figure. And I don't know if it worked. I think it did to a degree, but
There's some of the Avengers, so I'm assuming that somebody's gotten into that.
the man, the stuff they're doing for Lego is just it's just epic. I mean, they're just huge, huge sets. And you know, they're not cheap either. I got to say.
Really? Are you a parent? Because I am.
No, I'm just saying. I'm only saying it from noticing.
Oh, my stars.
Every now and then looking at a set going, ooh, that's kind of cool. It's got the Hulk in it. It's got a couple of Ultrons. It's got an Iron Man. So, oh, look, it does this. And you hold it up. It's like $54. This isn't even the big ship. Like, Lego is really expensive.
Oh, and thank you, Lego, for appealing to girls, because now you got me both ways.
Well, and to bring it full circle, there is a company called Creo.
Oh, I know them, yeah.
I think it's Mattel. Well, I went to the Star
Trek. It's Hasbro.
I went to the Star Trek Summit about 2 weeks ago, a week and a half ago. Which was at the Paley Center, hung out with Brent Spiner, you know, told some stories from the old days when we used to go out drinking. And they had a great 90-minute slideshow of all the things that Star Trek has brought us, but what's coming and all this, to the, you know, the big things in Vegas, the big, there's going to be a full-scale Enterprise in Vegas. It's going to be a resort, you know, full-size Enterprise.
Like, one-to-one scale?
Like, they're saying one-to-one scale, and they showed the artwork where escalators would be going up into the saucer section, and that's where you'd stay and then go to, you know, Starfleet Academy or whatever you want to do. But Creo...
That's gonna tie with the Godzilla Hotel in Japan,
right,
for my bucket list.
Right. I know. But what Creo is doing... is making, they show the prototypes of the original crew from the 60s as little Creo figures. And then they are making a Creo Enterprise that I believe she said consisted of 1,500 pieces.
Ugh.
And they showed this thing digitally come together, and it was massive. It was like a coffee table with the, they had a separate bridge with lights and sounds and all kinds of stuff, and it's all going to be, you know, I guess that's the new model making. I mean, I guess it, because remember the bridge? Did you ever want the Enterprise bridge?
I had it. We just talked about it. I ruined it.
Oh, you did? That's one you ruined. Okay.
Yeah, I ruined it, and I also didn't have yellow paint, so everybody just got a red and blue shirt.
That's racist.
Yeah, it was. You know, but... You know, I have no desire to go back to those kits either. I don't want to. I still don't think I have the patience or talent to put those together.
And you knew, even though we didn't, even if we were too young to quite get the joke, you knew when you'd spend a little bit too much time around the glue, when your head started. Your head.
No, I was a kid of the 70s, and my dad sold model stuff it was drilled into my head not to smell the glue. It would, you know, rot my brain and make me crazy. Because my dad had problems, you know, they had to put glue under the counter and stuff like that.
Yeah, because kids, because it was, well, it was a joke. And, oh God, there was some James Garner.
It's a Ramones song.
There was some James Garner, Doris Day, it's got to be 1969, 70, 71, like, you know, one of those pillow talk type things. And he makes a joke about, you know, the kid, one of her kids making model kits. And he's like, yeah, how much of the glue is he using for the kit, and how much is he sniffing?
Well, and, you know, it's known that one of the glue manufacturers started putting horseradish in theirs because it was, you know, impossible to sniff.
What?
Yeah, you've never heard that?
No.
Yeah, I heard a guy tell that story on Letterman.
He would put horseradish in.
They added horseradish to the glue so that it would be harder to sniff glue.
Wow, that's I did not know that.
Yeah,
I did not know that. We should have sniffed some glue before we did this episode.
Would it have made it better? I just quit, eh? Isn't that a line from Airplane? I picked a wrong week to stop sniffing glue. Yeah.
It starts with the wrong week to stop drinking.
Right, yeah.
Alice, and then eventually it goes to, I guess I picked the wrong week to stop sniffing glue.
Yeah. It was a man by the name of Charles Miller, and he put horseradish in all model cement products in the late 1960s to halt a glue-sniffing craze.
Well, how come I remember sniffing it on...
I don't know. I guess they took it out. Or you like horseradish. I'm not sure.
I used to, well, no wonder. I used to put it on my roast beef sandwiches. you know, my bacon in the morning.
It's wasabi, isn't it?
No wonder.
Isn't that what wasabi
is? I never heard that. That's a crazy story. I never heard that.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think. There was something else. Oh, were you at all familiar with the Aurora Monsters as a kid?
I was very familiar with them. My cousin had some. I was mostly familiar with them through Famous Monsters and Starlog and Fangoria and things like that and the ads. You know, we weren't around for the original kickoff of those. But they just kind of seemed like mainstays. I'd always kind of see them around in one form or another.
And then
I think I made the werewolf because he came with like a tree and a base.
Yes. Well, he comes with a rock, yeah.
But, you know, when those early days of kits, you know, we still didn't quite figure out gloss versus matte.
Oh, my goodness.
Colors. No. Everything was gloss.
Oh, everything was, yeah.
Everything was gloss.
Laps.
Gloss werewolf, gloss hair, you know.
I absolutely, well, yeah, because your choices and the brush you got. I mean, you know, I'm a painter now. I actually... You know, I try to do portraits and things like that, and I always laugh when I think of the brush you got as a kid to paint a model kit. Was just this 50 hairs all splayed out everywhere on a plastic tube that's about 2 inches long.
It's true. You know? When you think about, I mean, the deepest I think I went into, you know, really getting detailed with painting stuff or painting miniatures and things like that. It was right on that time of those Doctor Who metal miniatures. You know, it took forever to get a money order over to England to make the right order, and you get these things, and they weren't very good.
Yeah, I wanted them too, and I didn't play any role-playing or anything like that. I was just interested in owning them.
They just weren't very good. They just were the choices that they made, and the sculpts were not very good. And you know, it was what my dad, not too subtly, used to refer to as shit metal. He goes, "Well, they're made of shit metal." I'm like, "What does that mean?" He's, you know, it's the cheapest metal you could possibly make to blend them. It's just shit, fall apart, bend. But then there was this company called FASA. FASA.
FASA. Yes.
That one day I'm in the hobby shop. And I see these little boxes shaped like TARDISes. One said the Five Doctors, one said Daleks, one said Cybermen. And I pick them up, and I can see through the little windows on each side that these are 10 times better than what this British company is doing. And I don't know where these things came from, but the details...
They were for the role-playing game, which I never understood what you did with them.
And I never got the role-playing game, but the detail in the faces and just... Everything was just slightly exaggerated with Baker's teeth. I mean, we're talking... These things were lucky if they were an inch tall, these little figures.
Yeah, they were kind of weird looking.
And I became obsessed with them because it was the Doctors, the Ice Warriors, the Cybermen, Davros, Daleks, some companions like Joe... And Sarah Jane and Leela. I mean, those are that's the breadth of the characters that they had. Whereas the other company, I think, had released Turlo, the Fifth Doctor, and a Rastan robot. That was
That's all you need.
Yeah, and a larger Tom Baker that I don't think I ever put together. But I found something in me to paint these things. And I sent you photos of them. I've still got them. All these years, you know, 30-some years, I've still got them. In my display case, I am astounded at the detail. I mean, I got checkered trousers on Patrick Troughton. Like I painted the trousers like cream colored and then went black lines all the way down to make checkered. Like I couldn't get my hand that steady to do a signature if I wanted to today. But there was a short period at 13, 14, whatever it was, that I got all these little miniatures and
pre-booze.
And painted them, right, pre-booze. And then never happened again. That might have been the tail end of it and said goodbye to model kits. Although, you know what? I did something years ago. Maybe this is 10 years ago or more. Maybe like 10 years ago. I just was in a toy store or a hobby shop or something. I thought, you know, I'm going to get a model kit. And I bought a model kit of like a, you know, one of the German planes we used to make, like a Stuka or something like that. And I put it all together and I painted it and put the decals on it. And I think I just threw it out after that. It just was like, I just wanted to see if I could do it again.
You know, the last model I put together was around the time the Dark Shadows movie came out, and they reissued the MPC Barnabas Collins kit, which I have always wanted.
Oh yeah.
And I'm not a, like, I can't sit down and watch hours and hours of Dark Shadows, but I really think it's iconic and cool. And I went a little crazy that summer. I bought a bunch of different Dark Shadows stuff. So I bought that kit. I got it home, and it was the biggest nightmare to put together. I got mad putting it together. It does not fit together right. It has interchangeable arms that don't work.
What?
And I had to use putty and swearing, and I don't even know where it is. I think I actually got rid of it because it was a bad job. And you know, I take pride in my work, and
I
I
know,
like
and
to work.
you've got a reputation.
Well, I'm not sure about that, but it pissed me off so much. And you know, it was funny. I contacted a friend of mine who's an avid model guy, lives locally to me, and I was kind of joking about this, and he said, "Is that thing still a piece of ass to put together?" And I go, "It's horrible." And he goes, "It was as a kid too." And yeah, it turns out they faithfully reproduced this piece of crap.
Wow, down to the claws.
And case in point, you know, you just reminded me. This guy, there's a guy local to me who's an avid Aurora, I guess, aficionado. And this guy actually owns things like the unproduced Metaluna Mutant kit.
Ooh.
That Aurora was going to do things like that.
Okay.
And there's actually a really beautiful documentary. You know,
Oh, I think.
it's done in kind of a schlocky 60s monster kid way, which I'm okay
Was
with, but
it done by what's his name and what's his face?
Daniel Roebuck,
Yeah.
I think he's done something, but he's involved. I think he's interviewed in this one, but it's done by a different company. And I will dig it up because I bought it. It's hosted by Zachary,
That's
who's
right.
yeah, and it is a very good and informative documentary. It
You know, I almost bought
tracks down the living Aurora people like
like an
Andrew
early
Yanchis.
copy of it on DVD at Creature Feature, the Creature Feature thing, like 2 years ago.
Yeah, I'm glad I bought
I was
it.
gonna get it, and I thought, ah, do I need it?
Like, that's really what started everything for me and everybody, because it started Figural Models. But the thing I really enjoy about Aurora Monsters is the monster scenes. Have you heard about these?
Oh, the ones with the victim and all
The
that stuff.
Victim and
Yeah.
Vampirella that
Yeah.
had like moms picketing.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, Aurora, I guess Aurora wasn't just idle in just reproducing their old kits. They created these great reissues of Frankenstein and Dracula and the Creature, but then they wanted to go forward with this whole line that could be used almost as toys, and they create all these torture devices and the victim, which they later, and Dr. Deadly. That was the villain, right?
Well, I remember there's one with like a woman in a cage or something.
Yeah, Dr. Deadly and the victim, and then the victim didn't go over well. They have this infamous comic ad that has Vampirella and Frankenstein capturing this woman, and then
Right.
they're going to torture her, and mom's head exploded everywhere.
Yes.
And Aurora was owned by I can't quite remember what, if it was a food-based company, like, not General Mills because they owned Kenner, but a company like that that just went what
Yeah.
and dumped the line to Canada, and the victim became Dr. Deadly's daughter. I remember that. She's still,
That makes it okay then.
it makes it look okay, and Dr. Deadly's daughter looked very upset.
Well, I swear in the back of one of those famous monsters, I don't know, an ad in the back of, or was a retrospective. I forget where I saw this, but no one can seem to corroborate this for me. I swear, beyond the Vampirella kit that was made, that was through Forrest Ackerman, that was in the back of the magazine, the only way to get it was to order it through Famous Monsters. I think it went directly to Fori because he co-created the character or whatever. I swear there was an ad for like an Amigo-esque or a 12-inch doll figure.
I don't know anything about that.
Of Vampirella. You see, you of all people, I would think no would know what I was talking about.
Yeah, no. But do you remember those kits?
Photographic evidence anywhere on the internet.
Do you remember those kits by MPC? I wanted to remember these called the Gigantics.
No.
They were the coolest concept. They were giant bugs. So it was like a wasp.
Yes!
A praying mantis.
I lusted over them in the catalogs.
Yeah, I tracked those.
Mantis? Yes.
I tracked those down in the 80s.
Nice.
And my sole goal was to, because they were so neat, they just hit every button. And
yeah.
You know, I searched through toy shows, and I finally found them, and I got them home. And I'll never forget it. I opened up the box, and I went, I can't do this. Like
too complicated?
Too complicated, too detailed. I knew. I was flashing back to ruining those Star Trek kits. And I swear to God, I closed the lid and I put them on my toy show table the next time I did a show.
Just walked away.
I remember thinking that. I was so excited to get them. I got home and I realized, oh, I gotta do a lot of work.
Well, you know what Dirty Harry used to say? A man's got to know his limitations.
Was that a Dirty Harry line?
Oh, yeah, I think it was in the first one.
Okay, it's not his most famous line.
No, man's got to know his limitations. Like, you know, I'm never going to dunk a basketball, so I don't even try. So if you can step back from that and go, I don't think it is. But I remember those things. I loved them, and I would stare at them through one of the flyers that came with the model kit, and I thought it was a movie. I kept looking for this movie to come out. Yeah. It was like giant bugs attacking a town or whatever. Like, how could this not
be a Burt I. Gordon film?
Brilliant, brilliant stuff. Always wanted to make those, never did. And I think one of the last hurrahs were, again, being a huge fan of Indiana Jones and Raiders of the Lost Ark. And not really knowing what a collector was, but trying to get everything that I could as an 11-year-old, getting all the figures, getting the Well of the Souls, you know, the different play sets and things. And then you'd come around the corner, like at a Target, and there would be the model kit section. And I think I have this vague recollection. I'm not even going to look it up, but I'll look it up later. I have this vague recollection that there was a model kit made of the boat plane that he got on at the beginning of the movie that had the letters CPO on one of the flotilla things. But I think I'm wrong, because years and years went by, and I asked people about it, and they said, no, I don't think it ever got made. The only thing that MPC ever made was – and the other thing, my father, you know, being the World War II buff, the history buff, would say to me as – you know, when your dad gives you an assignment, you do not want to let him down. First off, he's taking an interest in something that you dig, like Darth Vader or whatever. And if he says, hey, you think you can find me when you're out and about? You ever think you could find me? To this day, I'm still doing it. Like whenever I find him a new figure of Gort from Day of the Earth Stood Still.
Oh, yeah.
The first one to pre-order it to get it to him because it's his favorite robot of all time. And he was like, you know, the flying wing in Raiders, when the flying wing goes in that circle and that's that famous fight between Indy and the German mechanic, one of the greatest movie fights of all time.
Yeah.
He goes, they must have made a model kit of that thing. And I looked and looked and looked and looked, and all they ever made was this giant diorama of the entire desert chase. And then way off at the end of it was the flying wing, but it was about the size of a 50-cent piece, maybe.
Oh.
And many years later, in the early 2000s, the Disney parks started to put out four or five original pieces of Indiana Jones merchandise that you could only get at the parks, like an action figure of Indy, some little you know, PVC type figure, little army men type figures. And by God, they made the flying wing. It came in like three sections, and I bought like two of them for my dad. So he finally got his flying wing after all these years.
That's really cool.
Yeah, and you can put the little Indian, the little mechanic in front of it like they're fighting. So, yeah, so that's a nice way to kind of wrap things up, I guess.
I'm kind of at the point where I'm sure I'll think of things after we end, and I'll bring them up in the next episode.
Well, all I know is I'm going to get some model glue.
I've got some here if you want to come
It's
over.
been it's been
I want to just bring up one more thing before we end because it's May now, and it's 1 month until our big convention, which is Mego Meet.
Woohoo!
And Mego Meet, we've been doing it for 10 years. This is the 11th. This is a big leap of faith for us because we've moved it from our comfy little toy museum in Wheeling, West Virginia, and we've joined forces with Art. Let me say this again. Probably Art Balthazar, who is a comic creator responsible for things like Patrick the Wolf Boy and Tiny Titans.
That's right.
And we are calling it Aw Yeah, Mego Meet.
Yeah.
Art is a Mego nut and a customizer, and he owns a comic book store in Skokie, Illinois called Aw Yeah Comics. So it's going to be Mego Meet meets comic show. We've put some money down. We have a hotel in downtown Skokie, Illinois, which is about 15 minutes from O'Hare. And we're hoping this is the biggest Mego Meet ever.
Well, did I tell you? I'm not sure if I told you that while I was at Star Wars Celebration, I got a call from Alex Ross saying he got the stuff that you sent him that I requested, and he loved the Mego stuff that was in there, the magazines. And then, of course, he pulls out the Mego Meet thing, and he goes, "Ooh, I think I should go to this. This is not that far from me, and I'd love to meet Brian." So
Oh.
you might have a little special guest showing up at your latest Mego meet. And he had no idea that Art was such a Mego collector because he's known him for years.
Oh, really?
Yeah, well, I mean, more casually than anything, but he's admired his work, and he's like, "Oh my God, he loves Mego? How cool is that?"
Art made a Brick Mantooth before I did.
Wow.
That's really true. I met him at a show, a couple, within 2 months, and he goes, "I got to show you something," and he had made brick.
That's awesome.
I thought, and he made brick with just a towel, which I was thinking of doing
That's awesome.
when we're making it in China. But I thought, ah, that's a little too, that's a bit of a rip for people.
Right. That's awesome. So, well, we'll do a show before then again, probably.
No.
No?
Oh, yeah, we'll probably tape it, but I don't know if it'll air before I go away or it'll air the same weekend.
Well,
But
let's see what we can do.
it's June 5th in Skokie, Illinois. For details, we have a Mego Meet Facebook page, but of course you can also just go to the front page of the Mego Museum and look for the Mego Meet ad. And that's it.
I know I will.
Yep, yep.
One day I will make it to Mego Meet.
You should.
But with my responsibilities with the orphanage and the soup kitchen and just the stuff I'm doing at the lab.
And those strippers you're teaching how to read.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
God bless you.
Bunny and Skokie are
Yep.
they're getting there.
You getting there? What about taffeta?
Taffeta's just working on instruction sheets right now. I haven't moved up to actual books.
Tell her I say hi.
But Tawny's doing great with the monster at the end of this book. She loves him.
Oh, that Tawny.
Gets her every time.
Okay.
All right, great show. I think we've learned a lot. I mean, speaking of models, what a great
Models Inc.
Models Inc. Last model I put together. Yeah. thanks for listening, everybody. And
Thanks again.
keep the topics coming, as they say.
Yeah, we could really use your help.
Yeah, everything's just going to sound filthy at this point, so I'm just going to sign
Yep.
off. All right. Good
Sounds
night,
good.
everybody.
Good night, everybody.